Thank you very much, Tamás, and thank you for the invitation to speak at the Fields Institute, famous institute disseminating mathematical and applied mathematical ideas. So I'm very impressed by these activities, and I'm honored to be the speaker today. Now, the title you can already see here, but let us switch for the slideshow. Where is it? Somehow it is inactive. It turned out to be inactive. Oh, maybe. Yeah, good. Thank you. Expert. All right, so the title of the talk is Optimization Methods in Valuation of Financial Derivatives and Financial Planning. And I would like to summarize three different methods here, recent results of mine. One of the results is joint work with Tamás Santay. The other two results are mine. They are, except for the first one, the other two are still under research, so this is the results that I'm going to present here, not fully published today. So the first topic in this talk is the valuation of the American option and its approximation, which is called Bermudan option. That is a joint work with Sunday, which is submitted for publication already in a journal. The second one will be relatively brief, and again the third one will be relatively longer, the conditional, mean conditional variance portfolio selection model, which I think it is a novel approach to the problem. The dynamic programming model that I'm going to study here is essentially a refinement of a method originally proposed by Jeske and Johnson in 1984. They called it analytic valuation method for the American option. They subdivide the time into periods, but the number of periods with them is at most four, and gave some formulas for the Bermuda and the approximating option, and then evaluate the numerical integrals to obtain the values. Now, maybe not everybody knows why the Bermuda option. The terminology was given by Semmelweis, a Nobel Prize winner economist. In the United States, an option is originally and by nature is an American option, which can be exercised any time between now and when the option expires. So that is the American option by nature. Now, if it can be exercised only at the end of the period, then Semmelweis has called it European option, because if it is American, then the other one is European. If it can be exercised at a finite number of possible times, then it is between the European and the American option. Let us call it Bermudan option, because Bermuda is between the United States and Europe. Okay, it has nothing to do with the doing or having the option in Europe or America whatsoever. So this is the formula. I don't want to spend time with it. They celebrated the Black-Scholes-Merton formula for the option prices in case of European options. Capital D means the dividend, and the other parameters in these formulas are then well known. lowercase is the time now, capital T is the future time, capital F the current asset price, and sigma is the volatility. Okay. So this, the assumption behind it is that the price of the asset performs a so-called multiplicative Brownian motion, which is defined at that. S of t is equal to S of 0, e to the sigma times bt plus mu times t, where b of t is a standard Brownian motion, sigma is a positive parameter, and mu is a real parameter. Now, we assume that mu is equal to r minus sigma squared half, in which case the price process, the discounted price process becomes a so-called martingale, and if we calculate the option price by the use of this assumption as a simple conditional expectation, or if we solve the partial differential equation proposed by Black-Scholes and Merton, then we obtain the same values. Therefore, it is legitimate to work with this assumption mu equals r minus sigma squared half, and then use traditional probabilistic ideas. Now, the dynamic programming approach to calculate the value of the Bermudan put option as an approximation to the American option begins with the subdivision of the time between lowercase t and capital T into subintervals, and if you designate the time now by t, but at the same time t0, and the future time capital T at the same time t sub n, then the subdividing points will be t1, etc., tn minus 1. Okay, now the American Bermudan option, put option, will be designated by capital P sub n, and the Bermudan call option will be designated by capital C sub n. It is well known that the American call and the European call prices are equal to each other if there is no dividend in it. But if there is dividend, they may be different. So here is the dynamic programming recursion for the option price. But we have to agree something that what is the rule to evaluate, to exercise the option. And our rule is the following. This can be, from a more abstract point of mathematical point of view, discussed at the same time, but let it be an assumption now. If the spot price, that is to say the payoff, which is x minus s, positive part, surpasses or equal to the current value of the American option, then we exercise the option at that time, okay? So in agreement with this, we define the V sub n function as the, at expiration, the payoff function, and then go down and V sub I s is equal to the maximum of x minus s, positive part, it's, the second one is positive value, therefore we can remove the positive part from here. And the maximum of this value and the discounted value of the price of the American option at this moment. We have assumed that the logarithm of R sub I has normal distribution with expectation R minus sigma square half delta Ti, and sigma square times delta Ti is the variance of it. Okay, and now at the end, P sub n, which is, on the other hand, in this notation, equal to V sub 0 of S, is the price of the fair price of the Bermudan option. Now, this is a dynamic programming and an optimization type model, but it is necessary to discuss the properties of these functions, whatever we have here, and then we want to solve it, okay? And this is one of the achievement in this paper that we will present closed form, even though recursion formulas for the solution of the dynamic programming models. So it is not difficult to prove that these vis-a-vis functions are continuous, strictly decreasing and convex for non-negative S values, and the expectation of E I, etc., is strictly convex for non-negative S values. And so this theorem implies that for any I, there is a unique solution to this equation with respect to S, and the solution will be designated by Q sub n minus I. And these are called critical prices, where the payoff is equal to the current value of the option. Okay. So also we have a decreasing property of these vis-a-vis functions, and the critical prices form a decreasing sequence. Now, it is not known for the general case whether or not if the subdivision, if we further subdivide one subdivision, then the option price increases, but we don't know if it increases, if it just passed from n to n plus 1, whether or not it is true or not. There is no counterexample and there is no proof for it. Okay, now we introduce some quantities which are similar to those quantities that appear in the Black-Scholes-Merton European Option Price formulas, and then come some horrifying, very complicated formulas which are the solutions of the dynamic programming equations. Okay, so we define these U sub S functions, but at the end I will derive a very simple consequence of all these things. So just formally I am going to define these U sub I of S functions. Noteworthy is that we have univariate normal probability distribution here, bivariate, three-variate, etc. And so I-variate is the highest dimension of the normal distribution that is used in this recursion. And similarly, we have some other values, W, defined by these of these B sub 1 and B sub 2 functions that I have introduced formally. And so the correlations that are in these recursion formulas are given by these values, rho jk h, h is in the h dimension of normal distribution, and so the procedure then is the following, that we subsequently define by the solution of these equations the q values, and then it turns out by a theorem that with these S values, the X times U sub I of S and S times W sub I of S is equal to just that value which is in the dynamic programming recursion. Okay, and then finally we obtain the value of the Bermudan put option in this formula. So I don't expect you obviously to understand this very complicated recursion, but the important thing is that we do have closed form formulas for every n in this way of the Bermudan option as an approximation of the American option. And here is now something that is probably easier to understand. What is the probabilistic meaning of these functions, of this function U sub n of S? So this is equal to the probability that that the present value of dollar 1 discounted at a constant rate R paid up on the time of when this geometric Brownian motion, geometric Brownian motion here first reaches or exceeds the discrete critical function Qn minus h at some point THH runs 1 through n. So this is the present value of dollar 1 discounted whenever this geometric Brownian motion first reaches the critical function. So we finally had a nice probabilistic characterization, and similarly you have a probabilistic characterization of the WM function, and so I hope that this way the procedure receives a nice probabilistic interpretation. The next step is, however, to evaluate these multivariate integrals. So in this subdivision, we go up to n equals 20, so 20-dimensional normal integrals are we going to calculate. And there are various packages or procedures which solve, which integrate multivariate normal probability density functions. And so here on this transparency, I mention a few of them. I mention those which we have applied. One of them is due to Gantz, and Gantz and Kwong in 1991 and 2000. And the other one is due to my co-author, Sante, and then Gassman et al. And the third one is due to Ambar Tsung and et al. From 1998. So we have applied not one, but three different integration methodologies in order to check the result. Now, the second numerical integration method proposed by Santai and then also Gassman et al. Works in such a way that we calculate lower dimensional normal probability distribution function values, and then use some sharp probability bounding technique to further approximate the joint probability of the event that the Xi sub I random variables are small or equal to X sub I, which are designated by the event A sub I, etc. So the joint occurrence of this event is equal to 1 minus the probability that at least one occurs. And then here we apply sharp probability bound for the union. So quite interesting, the three probability bounds that I ultimately that we have ultimately used, fortunately, give us gross numerical results, and therefore, I think that this calculation is reliable. Now I'm going to show you a number of tables and numerical results are presented, but I would like to make one further remark in connection with this option values. Suppose that we have calculated P sub n, etc., P sub n, which means that the Bermudan put options up to n, or C sub n and etc. C sub n, the Bermudan column option values up to a subdivision which is equal to n, then it, when we read the number 20 regarding the subdivision, then obviously the numerical integration becomes shaky a little bit, and therefore it is necessary to smooth the values of the obtained option. And so our smoothing function has the following form: f of n is equal to k minus the summation alpha sub I multiplied by e to the negative b sub I n. There is a background for that approximation that I will mention soon, but how do we find the constant k and alpha sub I? By the use of a method of least squares, and we minimize with respect to k and the alpha f sub I and the numerically obtained p sub I values. The mathematical background of this approximation is that interestingly, the option values, which is true for the call and for the put values equally, have a very interesting mathematical property that we observe numerically. There is no proof of this property. It seems to be very, very difficult. However, maybe almost true, or maybe true, I don't know. The situation is the following. So here I show you the sequence of the Bermuda and call option prices up to 20. And here are the prices. So it is an increasing function, as you see. So the first order differences are positive, as you see in this second column. The next differences are negative, as you see in this column. And again, the next differences are again positive. So the differences have alternating signs. Alternating signs. And so this is the totally positive function, which we have in continuous variables as well. So if you have a totally monotonic function in a continuous variable, then there is a theorem for that we can write it up as a mixture of negative exponential functions. So using applying this in the discrete case, we use this approximation here and smooth the result that we obtained for the Bermudan put and call option values. Okay. Now, so people who are working to calculate the values of the American options like to use the trinomial tree calculation methodology. However, as we show in our paper, this has a produces a systematic error, because whenever we write up the and calculate these synthetic prices in order to obtain the no arbitrage probabilities, then we essentially replacing the expectation of a function by the upper bound of the expectation of a convex function, which definitely produces a one-way distortion. So frequently say that if they use 10,000 or 15,000 steps in the binomial or trinomial tree calculation, this is the true value, what we finally obtain, is not really not necessarily the true value due to this distortion. So the true value is on the left-hand side that we have to apply, and the approximate value. So the value that we in practice apply is on the right-hand side, and there is a one-way distortion in between. Well, on the other hand, looking at it from the probabilistic point of view, the difference between theoretical and empirical probability distribution function is a order of magnitude 1 over square root of n, and if you take n equals 10,000, it is 10 to the 4, its square root is 10 to the 2, okay, so it produces only a second order, two-digit accuracy, and not more. Good. Now, so here, numerical values. So whatever we have calculated and looked at the literature, it turns out that the literature overestimates the value of the American option. So assuming that our calculation, again we have used three different normal probability approximations and very careful smoothing procedure, it turns out this, if you look at this value, these are Jeske and Johnson values. Okay, so they have some problems where they specify S, R, X, sigma, and T, and it turns out that the Jeske and Johnson, these hour, the exponential is smooth. So hour is always smaller than the Jeske and Johnson value. But similarly, the situation, if you go and look at any other problem, numerical values proposed by other authors, and so it is very interesting, and we think that our methodology probably can be the most accurate, that is at least our assumption. Now, I would like to know that what is going on. Well, so this is the first thing that I wanted to present to you. And now I have to fight again for the picture. Maybe Tamás can help me again.
Flip page again?
Yeah, let me start again, okay. And then... go over to the second topic that I want to present to you today, which is much easier to understand. The balance on the values of financial derivatives and the partial knowledge of the asset price probability distribution. So in this topic we deviate from the assumption that the asset price performs a multiplicative Brownian motion, and in fact if we look at the book published by Lowell McKinley in 1999, Random Walk Down Wall Street, Princeton University Press, and they give some numerical evidence that it is not always true that the asset price follows Brownian motion. Now that in this case we need some other methodology, maybe some other model, or some values on which we base approximation to the option prices. One way to do it is to give moment-based approximations to the option prices and use the moment problem, in other words, by way of which we can give lower and upper bound on the price of the options, depending on what we are doing. Now, Richkin in 1985 probably was the first who gave bound on the European options if mu and sigma are known for the asset price. Then came low and they gave an upper bound if these two values are known. Grandi in 1991 assumed that only the nth moment, one moment, which is the nth moment of the asset price probability distribution is known, and gave an upper bound. Zheng used the moment problem in its original form, where mu and sigma are only known, but is to say only two moments are known, and Bertimas and Popescu use some other approximation to this problem. Now the moment problem can be formulated in such a way, or at least one of the moment problems, that we want to minimize or maximize a functional on the unknown probability distribution, capital F of Z, subject to the constraint that the moments up to order M of the unknown probability distribution are known. We can formulate the dual of this problem, and Kempermann, in his very well-known paper from 1968, mentioned that this dual problem is probably has to be attributed to Markov already from the 19th century. And so he was a student of Chebyshev, and so Chebyshev and Markov already worked on the problem, and the Dutch theaters simultaneously about the same time as Markov. Okay. Now, Kempermann also presented a number of formulas for this functional of for the objective function as bounds, and gave several other interesting examples in his paper. My approach to the problem is to discretize this problem and then to develop some theory in connection with the discrete moment problem, And the basis for this approach is that some years ago, as a matter of fact, it was already a long time ago, almost 20 years ago, I discovered that the sharp probability bounds that are sometimes called Bonferroni probability bounds, but Bonferroni did nothing in this respect to make it sure. But these bounds, sharp Bonferroni bounds, can be obtained as optimum values of moment problems, where the random variables are discrete. The first sharp bound, not using the moment problem, but without the moment problem, was given by two Canadians, as a matter of fact, Borden and Sankoff in 1968. So their bound was recognized by myself as a solution of the moment problem. And so discrete moment problems usually give us good approximation for the optimum values through the two bounds, if the lower and upper bounds are close enough to each other. Okay, so this is the definition or formulation of the discrete moment problem. We assume that we have an unknown probability distribution, x sub I, designated by x sub I, a finite number of possible values in connection with the random variable, which are the possible values are the z sub i's. And again, we want to minimize or maximize function along this unknown probability distribution subject to this constraint, where the moments are known up to k equals m. And so this expectation of the function along the random variable x is, if we solve both linear programming problem, is between the minimum and the maximum, the two optimal values of this linear programming problem. Now, if f of z is equal to 1 from z onwards, where z is greater than or equal to z sub r and 0 when z is smaller than z sub r, then obviously we have bound for the probability that this capital X is greater than or equal to z sub r, lower and upper bound. Now, the interesting thing is that if we have two functions, I mentioned only two different functions here, but there are some other functions which come into consideration. If f of z has non-negative divided differences of order n plus 1, or f of z is of this type, then the dual feasible basis of the linear programming problem can be fully described. And each dual feasible basis gives a lower and upper bounds depending on if it is in the minimization or maximization problem dual feasible basis. And the structure of the dual feasible basis are the following. If m plus 1, m is the number of known moments, is even, and it is a minimization problem, then we have consecutive paths. And I am listing only the subscript of the basis vectors in the basis. If m is odd, then we have consecutive paths and the addition of the zero. If it's a maximization problem, then we have consecutive paths, additionally we have the zero and the n, and if the n plus 1 is odd, then consecutive paths and the maximum of n. So if we pick arbitrarily basis which have this kind of subscripts, then we can immediately write up lower and upper bounds for the expected value of that sum for the and function, and so through this we can immediately give a variety of bounds. Now this is the case, the situation is more complicated if we work with the second function, so we want to bound the probability that it is the value of the random variable greater than or equal to XR. The question is now, how can we use this in bounding or valuing financial derivatives? And the interesting saying is, I'm going to give you just one example, because I want to spend some time with, on the third topic as well. So, as I already mentioned, if the function is this function, now we are using capital X, which is the capital X is equal to that price, the striking price that we are using in connection with this option, and so we want to take a look at this function f of v, v minus capital X, which is the payoff function. Okay, in the place of z, we are going to put the random variable capital S of t. And so the option price is equal to the expected, discounted expected value f of S of t, which is equal to this value. And now, there is essentially the same thing, our problem, the formal problem, where f is equal to this value now, and we will replace the z values by z1, etc. finite possible values. But the formal option, the formal expectation gives only the value of a very simple option, okay, the cash or nothing option, which is really a very simple one. But if you want to handle more complicated options, then we can do it also, but in this case we have to work with conditional expectations. So see the discounted expectation of the payoff function of the option can be written up as the conditional expectation of the payoff, given that S of t is greater than x, and multiplied by the probability that S of t is greater than x. And that is, it can equivalently be written up in the following way, that is equal to the discounted value. If you write up S of t in the form, that is equal to e to the alpha times dt plus b, but dt is not necessarily a normally distributed random variable. The important thing here is that here we have a function which is of the first type that I mentioned formally. In fact, all derivative of this function, if alpha is positive, and we replace in the place of z of t and lowercase z, all derivatives are positive. Therefore, all divided differences of the function, if we take a discrete function instead of the continuous, are positive, and we can give lower and upper bounds for both factors, for the first factor as well as the second factor. The way how we handle the second factor has already been described, but in this case, in the first case, we have to use conditional moment because it is a conditional probability. Okay, now let me turn the attention to the third problem, conditional mean and conditional variance portfolio selection model. I expect that this topic will come up in the talk of the second speaker today as well. So it is widely known that the model is due to Harry Markowitz, who made it in 1952 and wrote a book in 1959 about it, and received Nobel Prize for this work in 1987, Black and Scholz and Merton. So I believe 87. So if we consider an asset and random returns on the assets, capital R1 and Rn, the question is how much to invest in the different assets. These are the unknown values x1, xn, in order to find an optimal portfolio. Here only the notations are mentioned. We create vectors out of these values. The expectations are designated by n sub I, and the covariance matrix of the random X is the capital R times X, and the variance of capital X is equal to X transpose CX. Now this C is, unfortunately, the notation is not incorrect, but it is the covariance matrix of the random returns. Now Markowitz's models can be summarized in this way. He is wants to the expected return large and the variance small, so he either maximizes the expected return subject to the constraint that the variance is, has an upper bound small or equal to V, and the sum of the invested amount is equal to 1. We are going to find out the proportions. Or about the same thing, if we minimize the variance subject to a constraint, which is an upper bound on the expected return, and the sum of the investment is equal to 1, x greater than or equal to 0. Or finally, combining the two objective functions, we take an objective function which is maximized m of t times m transpose x minus a positive beta times x transpose cx subject to xi equals 1. Now, in principle, we want to find for a variety of m values the optimal sigmas by either one problem, and then create a so-called efficient frontier, and then the practice is to choose the one of the points on the efficient frontier as our decision variable. Another interesting approach for optimal portfolio selection is due to Kataoka, who formulated the following model. Take the return, the random return, R transpose X, as, take the probability that this is greater than or equal to V, and prescribe that this probability is greater than or equal to lowercase p, which is the probability chosen by ourselves, and maximize V subject to this constraint. Now it is not difficult to find out that an equivalent formulation of this portfolio selection model is maximize this objective function subject to the constraint that the sum of the x of I is equal to 1 and x is non-negative. I believe that this is a better formulation than Markowitz's model for various reasons. One of the reasons is that we have a better understanding of the coefficient with which we multiply the variance, the standard deviation of the portfolio, which is the inverse function of the standard normal probability distribution function at the point 1 minus p, and p is equal to this probability in the constraint. And another thing is that we use the square root rather than the quadratic form, and the square root of this quadratic form has the same dimension as the expectation. Okay, now recently means somewhere in 1993, somebody invented in the financial literature the quantile, which is has been around in statistics for about 150 years, something like that. And it is now called value at risk. Value at risk. Okay, so the value at risk is defined, and one way to define it is the following. That we maximize V subject to the constraint x greater than or equal to V, and the probability for that is greater than or equal to P. Okay, and sometimes it is designated by VAR. An equivalent definition is given here, but if alpha is equal to 1 minus P, in that case the two values are equal to each other. Okay, now a further value was introduced by these two mathematicians, Rockefeller and Uriashev, into the financial literature, which is called conditional value at risk. And so they define it as the conditional expectation of the random variable x smaller than or equal to v if now x means a loss. Okay, therefore is the conditional expectation of the loss, given that the loss is smaller, or we can say conditional expectation of the revenue, given that the revenue is smaller than or equal to a certain value V. In this second definition, we define essentially the same thing, but in this case we are talking about the loss. Now, we can calculate the conditional value at least, because this is called C V A R T X equal to this value. Conditional expectation is not a new thing in stochastic programming. In fact, I may mention my previous work that back in 1973 I already introduced as a replacement of the complicated probabilistic constraint, the conditional expectation constraint. So instead of using this probabilistic constraint, which involves multivariate integration of calculation of multidimensional probabilities, this collection of constraints involving conditional expectations, and it is not difficult to prove that if psi sub I random variables have logarithmically concave probability density functions, then these are decreasing functions of the p sub I x, and as a consequence these inequalities can be substituted by linear constraint, and so the conditional expectation constraints take us back to the use of linear constraints. Another approach is due to Klein-Hannawald, who is not using a conditional expectation but the expectation of the total value Ci minus Tix positive part, which would be interpreted in practice as the, in for example in the power industry, as the total unserved power or the total loss in a certain period by the investor. Now, my contribution here is that so I'm going to introduce I'm going to look simultaneously at the conditional expectations x greater than or equal to v and x conditional expectation x more than or equal to v, and which are conditional expectations, the conditional variances in connection with these values, which are defined as the expectation of the square given x greater than or equal to v minus the square of the expectation of x given that x greater than or equal to v, and similarly in the second line I take the conditional expectation which can be associated, conditional variance which can be associated with the conditional expectation here in the second line. Now, I would like to prefer the first line and the first variance here, and then interpret x as the revenue, and I want x larger than a given value x, and say the following. This is out of the theorem. And one of the classical principles in statistics and also in probability, is whatever we are doing in statistical tests, that they define a critical region and reject the hypothesis if the value of the random variable falls in the critical region, and accept it in the opposite case, provided that some other condition is satisfied. Now, if I take into account that whatever people are doing in connection with value at risk is essentially the same thing, then why are we using just the conditional expectation? Why don't we use simultaneously the conditional variance? And in a similar way, we can define models which are closely related to Markovitch's mean variance models, conditional mean and conditional expectation models. Now, the good news, which is based on the local cavity theory, Tamás mentioned that I worked on this topic many years ago. The good news is that if we take this conditional variance of the random variable x, then as v is increasing, that is a decreasing function of v, provided that x has continuous distribution with logarithmically concave probability density function. So that is true in connection with the conditional variance. I told you I am not working with the second one, but that it is mentioned here that if in connection with the second conditional variance, we have an assertion which means that it's an increasing function of the variable x. Now, as time goes very fast, and it's almost, I am almost at the end of my lecture, so let me cut the whole thing short and state it as transparency probably as the last one, and explain a little bit what is going on here. So in a similar way, as Markovitch formulates his models, I'm going to formulate conditional, mean conditional variance portfolio selection models, where I want to maximize the conditional expectation that the revenue is greater than or equal to some value v sub zero, given that the conditional variance is equal to capital V, and maybe I include another constraint in connection with the value at risk that it should be greater than or equal to V sub zero. Now, in case of the C-bar models, conditional value at risk models, they are using the VAR value, the VAR value in that model. So from that point onwards, they take the expectation from the VAR, VAR. However, I look at it more in a more general way and don't assume that this V sub zero value is equal to the VAR, not necessarily. It's a special case if V sub zero is equal to the VAR, but I impose a lower bound on it, which is equal to V sub zero. The sum of the x is equal to 1 and x non-negative. Model 2, in case you minimize the conditional variance subject to a conditional expectation models, I like to include value at risk constraints in all these model constructions. And in model 3, similarly as in Markovitch's third model, I take the conditional expectation and subtract the conditional variance multiplied by beta. So the good news is that the conditional variance is a decreasing function, and due to this fact, I can make the problem convex. That is to say, the convex nature of the problem is not violated by the conditional variance. However, The convex nature of the problem is violated by the conditional expectation already in those models which have been proposed in the literature. Okay. However, I have algorithms, as a matter of fact, I do have algorithms for the solution of this problem and overcome the difficulty imposed by the non-convexity of the conditional expectation. Wherever it appears in model 1, model 2, as well as model 3, but I don't have a code for this at this moment, for this algorithms to solve the problem, and so I cannot at this time report about the numerical result. So I'm going to close my lecture. Thank you very much for the attention.